We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The absolute worst thing, Wade, that could happen did. Let me lay it out for you, man. Tennessee, the night before, day before, Saturday afternoon, they upset the Baltimore Ravens. So what'd that do? That the stakes are even higher because now the Tennessee Titans took care of the Baltimore Ravens, which meant all you had to do was win. And not only do you get a trip to that AFC Championship playoff game, but you get a chance to host that AFC Championship playoff game versus a team that you'd already beaten once this year. You're playing for the city of Houston, to host the franchise's first ever trip to the AFC Championship versus the Oilers. How about that? Versus the franchise that once was known as the Oilers. On top of that, the Texans get a 24 lead on Kansas City. No team in the NFL, in history of the NFL playoffs, had ever come back from 21 down in the first quarter. It had only happened 8 times out of 143 chances in NFL history, counting regular season. So make it even worse. KC, they drag Houston for the second quarter on in all three phases of the game in a way in which they got outscored 51-7. And Wade, they got outscored 51-7 the rest of the way. Wade, here's the deal. I'm sitting there watching this game and on 133 inches down the hallway right here in the Verizon Artist Lounge.
It's a nice little setup.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's me. Boss Man's over there creating all his imagery and keeps his station sounding great. And Sean Pendergast is sitting over there, and we're breaking bread. Sean's cheering and throwing stuff when things bad happen. And it got so wild in the first half of that game, the first quarter for the Texans, the second quarter for Kansas City, where you're sitting at halftime and Kansas City's up, what was it, 28-24?
28-24 at half.
And wait, I ain't gonna lie to you, man. I'm as good as anybody out there watching a game live, even on a TV copy, and pulling some pretty accurate stuff off of it.
Yeah.
What are we doing schematically, good, bad? You know, what's the problems? I can watch it and tell a lot of what's going on. Is the quarterback, is the play caller, is the D? What's going on here? And I'm going to be honest with you, man. There was so much going on in that first half of that football game. One, I was extremely exhausted at halftime. But two, my mind was spinning, bro. I tried to gather my thoughts at half, and I was like, man, I can't exactly put my finger on what the hell just happened.
You know who else was thinking like that?
Who?
Bill O'Brien. And you know what? It's okay for you to think like that because you just covered the team, but you don't coach the team.
Right.
Bill O'Brien, listen, I'm gonna tell you about Bill O'Brien, man. The game started. The Texans won the coin toss. Bill O'Brien says, give me the damn ball.
Yes.
When he did that, I tweeted at the time. Come on. I said, hey, taking the ball when you win the toss tells me, hey, put the ball down, let's go. We're going to go down here and score. You know what the Texans did?
They went down there and scored.
It's 7-0. You talking about having a great feeling about what's going to happen today? Just him saying, give us the ball first, and then the play calling in that first drive. The little screen that he did to hop to start it out, set it up so later on he throws the go route to Steels.
Four plays
later.
That
tells me, okay, Bill O'Brien is out here dealing. He's setting up plays for later. He's using the RPO game with Deshaun Watson early in the game. He's using Duke Johnson had a carry early in the game, one for 11 yards. There was a lot of great things early in that ball game. I said, hey, Bill O'Brien is doing the damn thing. It's 21-0. It's 24-0. Everything is riding exactly how you would want, better than you would ever dream. And then you know what? You get a kickoff return. You get a quick touchdown. You get a decision to go for it on 4th and 4 with a fake punt. And then everything you described of there's so much going
just all
on.
Unraveled, yeah.
They completely forgot what the game plan was coming into Arrowhead Stadium. There's no way you can tell me that Bill O'Brien looks at the stat sheet at the end of the day and says, we ran the ball 20 times for 92 yards, and that was the plan. That was the way we were going to go on the road and beat Kansas City. The way you beat them, you showed in week 6. You had a blueprint. I don't remember exactly how many carries it was, but it's like 40-something carries in that game, over 200 yards rushing. So 20 carries for 92 yards, that's great for the first half.
Right.
But you can't go an entire ball game and go away from that. People are talking about the Kansas City offense is so damn good. They're so damn good. They're going to run up and down the field. Keep their ass off the field. They cannot score if they don't have the ball. And I'm so frustrated watching this team, knowing good and damn well you were given the game.
Yeah, handed
when
24
it's 21
points, yeah.
When it's 21 to nothing, it's over. Yeah. 24 to nothing, it's over. All you have to do is continue to be aggressive, play the game plan that you came in the game doing offensively, and everything else takes care of itself. And you know what? That didn't happen.
Wait, I don't know that I've ever seen a collapse. I mean, I've seen teams. I mean, you look back at the 93 Bills game. I mean, that was a collapse where the defense couldn't stop anybody, and it was one of those, like, it hits you for a quarter, and the next thing you know, you're losing the game, or you're giving up a big lead, and the momentum hit them. I don't know that I've ever seen the wheels come off of an entire organization the way they came off in the second, third, and fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about, like, it's hard to put a finger on one phase of the game that caused it, right? I mean, because ultimately they were running through the defense like mess through a goose. The offense couldn't sustain drives and chew clock, much less score points. And then the special teams, you fumble the kickoff and you go for it on the fake punt, and you again a turnover, and then you get stopped. So essentially two turnovers down there inside the 35 yard line, I guess, that are serious problems. So it was a collapse of just the wheels completely coming off. And there's so many different ways, man. I wish you could, which you've seen my rundown for today of how many different ways to approach this the coaching staff, the game, what needs to change. I mean, there's just so many different ways to attack it. But wait, I want to put this out there. I want to discuss the 5-minute stretch that I think to me speaks volumes about it tells us what we need to know about Bill O'Brien. It tells us essentially that he's overwhelmed with the position that he holds, the positions that he holds at this point in time. I mean, the series of plays that, and you alluded to them in your spiel there, in the first quarter, where you go field goal instead of going for it, which I think any of these instances we can go through, Wade, and we can go, well, would you have gone for it on fourth down? Well, I liked it, I didn't like it. Well, would you kick the field goal, go for it on fourth down? I liked it. I ain't interested in all that. This game, there was too much going on to dig into each individual decision of whether it was the right decision or not.
Well, I tell you what, I thought that was the right decision to kick the field goal. Go against me if you want to.
No, I'm with you.
Whoever disagrees, you are dealing with house money by taking that field goal there, because now you're going up 24 points. At the end of the day, what you were needed to fight against and combat against was doing something that would give the Kansas City Chiefs some type of life and some type of momentum. And if you go for it on fourth down, in that case, and you don't get it, you take points off a board, and you definitely give them momentum. That's the issue. So I don't have an issue with them kicking that field goal. But when you backdoor with that decision on fourth and four, it doesn't make any sense.
Bear with me, though, Wade. So check this out. I don't either. That's why I think we're really spitting in the wind if we want to talk about, well, you kicked. Well, no, I mean, 24 nothing's legit. That's a 4-possession game, or it's a 3-possession game with 3 touchdowns and 3 2-point conversions. That's a long shot. I don't really. What is less likely? 3 touchdowns and 3 2-point conversions, or 3 touchdowns, the extra point, and a field goal to end it? I don't know. 24 points is a lot of points. But wait, I'm not concerned with why he didn't go for it or why he didn't go for it. But this is the part right here that concerns me, is Bill O'Brien in the postgame presser when he is asked about that field goal.
Yeah, I felt like I had a first down there. And when I didn't, I just felt like we didn't have a great play there for the fourth down at that point in time. So I felt like it was better to to kick the three. But that's, you know, very fair question. But I felt like it was just better to kick the field goal there.
To me, forget about the game and where it was. I don't care about the score. I don't care about the situation. It's irrelevant to me. But when a GM / head coach / offensive coordinator gets up on the podium in a postgame presser and says, I didn't have a good call for 4th-and-1 in any game, somebody go, oh, well, man, it was a Kansas City game. You knew you were going to have to go. That's any game. It's not just – I've never been a part of an organization that didn't have a play for 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, goal line, short yardage type of situations. Never.
Got to have it play.
Got to have it.
That's one of those. Got to have it plays.
Everybody's got it in every game plan. And it's one of those where Bill O'Brien should have waved Deshaun back on the field and said, you know what play to call. You got it. Go ahead. Let me send you the personnel. Here it is. You got the play call. You don't need to hear me. You don't need to hear it in your head. We've ran it so many times in practice over the 18 weeks of the season and 6 weeks or 8 weeks of training camp that you know it like the back of your hand. You don't need me. This is you. Take command of the offense.
Listen,
that didn't happen.
I would have much rather heard him say something to the effect, listen, we're up 21-0. I didn't want to do anything that was going to give him momentum.
Come on.
So I took the points, put them on the board. We're up 24-0. We come into this game. There was no way we thought that we'd be at that point. So I didn't want to do anything to give them momentum.
Come on.
So that's what we did. And that was my decision, and that's how I felt about it.
If you
tell me that, I'm like, all right, you had a plan, and you're sticking to your plan.
Right.
I can rock with it. But when you say what was said at that press conference, it's like, all right, you're flying by the seat of your pants, and there's no direction. The inconsistency in your team is reflected by the inconsistency of the way you make decisions on Sunday. Wait, and that's what you saw.
You're in over your head. Could you imagine it? If Bill O'Brien, the head coach, had an offense, if you were his offensive coordinator, and that game played out the way it is, and you got on the damn stage after the game and you said, hey, you know, I didn't have a good fourth down play right there. You'd be on the first thing smoking.
I tell you what.
They send you back to Dallas so quick with mom and dad. I mean, it's like it's unacceptable, man. That in itself is unacceptable. But move forward. Kickoff return, boom, long kickoff return. They swings the momentum even, you know, I think that swung the momentum, got everybody back on the edge of their seat, and they go down and they score. And then on the flip side of it, you get the ball, you get it backed up on a fourth down, and you decide to go for it. Again, I don't have a problem, and I'm anxious to hear your opinion of this. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem in that going for it in that situation, Wade, because if I feel really, really good about, hey, we saw something on tape and we got these cats, this is going to be a perfect design. All we got to do is catch it and execute it. And who's on the other sideline, right? They're going to put up big time points. I don't have a problem with going for it. I have a problem with being quote unquote conservative and kicking the field goal on the front end of it, and then 5 minutes later deciding to go for it backed up in your own territory on a fourth and short.
See, I have a problem with both of those line of thinkings. In other words, like if he would have said, I'm going to be aggressive this entire game, then all right, that means that you're going to go for it on that fourth down, 4th-and-1, inside the 15-yard line of your opponent, and you're also going to go for it on 4th-and-4 when you're backed up.
Right.
And so by doing one, the drive before and then backdooring it, now it doesn't line up. But this is my thing with that 4th-and-4 decision to go for it on the punt fake. You got a guy that never carries the ball carrying the ball. That's one. Number two, if you convert that, where are you at? The 39-yard line, your own 39-yard line? What's the risk reward? If the risk is if we don't convert this, the crowd is going to lose it's going to absolutely lose its mind.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. As opposed to you get a new set of downs, but you're still at 39-yard line, there's no guarantee you're going to drive down the field and get points anyway. So punt them back deep and make them earn their momentum back. Don't give them the momentum. Make them earn it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with it. I didn't have a problem with the way things in hindsight for damn sure didn't have a problem. They was seven. It didn't matter if you pinned them at the one. Them jokers were gonna come back and score. I'm Clint Sterner. I'm joined by Wade Smith, former Houston Texan offensive lineman, and we are also joined by former Houston Astro friend of the station, former Houston Astros pitcher, and the pride of Galveston Ball High, my man Brandon Backe. Backe, what's going on, baby?
Hey, not much, buddy. How you doing, man? How's everything going?
Hey, everything's going good with us, man. We've been rocking and rolling since we saw you last. And I tell you, yeah, we've had a lot of good days between the last time we saw you and today. But, man, there is some smoke in the city of Houston today, and I appreciate you taking a few minutes, man. Let's jump into this thing, yeah. Backy. Look, I mean, obviously they come down with some stiff penalties. Jim Crane comes out and immediately takes quick and immediate action and fires A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luno. Look, man, you're a player in this locker room for the Houston Astros, and your head coach gets fired. The general manager gets fired. Where's your head at? What are you thinking as a player in that locker room?
Well, listen, man, this has been going on for a while as far as the talks about what might have been happening or what might have been going down in 2017. And so it's already been there. And I'm sure some of the players knew about it, obviously, that are there now. And they got caught, man. I mean, they got caught. It is what it is. And, you know, it's going to be a change for sure. But as a player, you just kind of get over it. You got to know that spring training's right around the corner. We got to go out there and handle our business and get ready for the season to come. So I don't think mentally it changes much as far as the players' mentality of getting ready for a season. However, the relationship between player and manager is going to be different just because AJ's not there anymore, and he's been there for quite some time. So that's going to be the only newness to it. Also, with the media talking about it throughout at least the early parts of spring training is going to be a little bit of a hassle, but you know, you just got to get over it. It is what it is. What's done is done, and get yourself ready to go out and win another, you know, go try to win another championship.
Brandon, from the perspective of a player, would you say that this coming down the pipe and the firing of A.J. Hinch and the proof from Major League Baseball that you were actually cheating, do you think that takes away from the actual World Series championship that the Astros were able to receive? Or, excuse me, not receive, to earn?
It's kind of hard to say it doesn't, at least a little bit, to be honest with you. I've been thinking about this for a long time since I've heard about it, and I was, you know, ultimately hoping that it was just, you know, false accusations. But, man, I'm telling you, as a player, as a former pitcher especially, I'm a little ticked off at the Astros myself, and especially those who were on the front line of this. And I'm hearing Alex Cora my former teammate Beltran was involved. And it kind of upsets me a little bit, because if I'm out there pitching my ass off for everybody on my team, knowing and find out that the opposing team is getting my signs, and I'm not able to pitch as well as I normally can because they're taking pitches that are close, or they're rocking me because they know it's coming, it's a little unfair. So I'm a little ticked off at those who were involved knowingly what they were doing. You know, I get it. I get that you want to win a championship. I get that you want to do well. And if you can get away with it, nobody knows about it, then ho-hum, it's okay. But you know what? They got caught. They're in trouble. I agree with the penalty. I agree with how Jim Crane has handled the situation. I love A.J. Hinch personally. I've talked to him many a times in his career with the Astros, and me being around the Astros after my retirement. And personally, he's a great dude, and I know that he said he didn't like the situation, what was going on, but he was kind of put in a bad spot where he just kind of just let it happen. And ultimately, it got him fired and suspended from the MLB for 1 year. But and I look back, I looked at Baseball Reference online, and I looked back at 2017 stats, and I found something a little interesting, to be honest with you, that ultimately, their home stats, most of their home stats, weren't as good as their away stats. So maybe they shouldn't have gotten, you know, the pitches, or should have known the pitch was coming, because it seemed as like they did a little bit better on the road than they did at home.
Yeah, stats don't lie, right? I mean, numbers don't lie. Men and women do. Hey, talk a little bit about, I mean, look, no players were suspended, right? And Wade and I can talk in reference to the NFLPA. I think Wade's had a lot of experience with the NFLPA. I obviously had my few years with the NFLPA, but the union that the players in Major League Baseball are a part of is clearly a very, very strong union. To think that none of these no players are going to be held accountable for this. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't. You know what? I think they probably should be, if they can put a finger on it, put a stamp on who exactly it was. Maybe that's the difficult thing to do, and that's why they're not doing it. But I think the penalty that has been set for what has happened and for them getting caught is setting a precedence of you better not try to do anything like this again, or else there's going to be a stiff penalty. I mean, $5 million from an organization, although an organization, you know, has a lot of money, $5 million is a lot. And the biggest thing is taking away 2020 and 2021 first and second round draft picks is a big damper to the Astros organization for the years to follow. Just think about it. We've got guys who are almost on the way out, big names. In the next 2 years, we're not going to have a lot of big names, or we have a lot of big decisions to make for those big names. And we're not going to have four guys, basically first and second round for the next 2 years, to try to come and fill in that spot. So it's going to be very tough for the Astros to continue their success in the next 3-4 years down the road because of this event.
Hey, Brandon, man, what are your thoughts on Mike Fiers right now? Because he was the guy that, that went out and let everybody know, went, spoke with the Athletic and let them know what was going on in the Astros organization. You, as a former pitcher, finding out that the Astros were part of, you know, doing things that put pitchers they were going against at a disadvantage, putting yourself in the shoes of a pitcher that was getting taken advantage of, and Mike Fiers being the guy within the organization that left and kind of blew the whistle on things. What are your thoughts on him and just kind of the rules within, and maybe the unwritten rules between in baseball of speaking on matters like this?
Yeah, buddy, I know you two guys know me well enough now because of the time I spent with you guys in studio, and you know I'm from Galveston, so I don't really care for guys that are snitches. You know, he's part of the team. He's part of the reason why he's got a ring on his finger is because of that. Here's my deal with Mike Fiers. If he had a problem with it as much as he does now, he should have said something then. Now, when he comes out later and says after the fact, because he's no longer with the team, for lack of better words, he's basically just a punk. And I don't respect him as a player or a teammate at all because of that. I don't doubt that I've already expressed my disgust in it. I don't like the fact that the Astros or any team would ever do anything like that. However, if my team was doing it and I found out, I would at least express my disgust in it amongst the players and have them either do something about it or not. At least I said something then. I wouldn't go to the media. I wouldn't bring it out and throw somebody under the bus. I wouldn't ever do that. Even though I know it's wrong, I would have taken it myself to the players or to the manager and express my disgust in that form, not just go out and just call them out to the public and create problems, basically.
Former Houston Astros pitcher Brandon Bakke joining us on Sports Radio 610, Houston sports leader. Brandon, what about the team moving forward, man? I mean, we heard Jim Crane talk earlier. I mean, training camp's right around the corner, February 15th, day after Valentine's Day, by the way. Make sure you take care of the wifey. But, yeah. They got a month, man. They got to go find a head coach. They got to go find a GM. He said he's going to handle, I guess, baseball operations for right now. I mean, how big of a deal is this that they go find a guy to essentially be the manager? I keep saying head coach, but be the manager for this football team when training camp rolls around?
Yeah, well, listen, man, I think as far as base, the players are concerned, it's the same thing every year. You get ready, you get yourself ready for a marathon of battles throughout the season for, you know, for 162 games, hopefully more because of playoffs. Your mindset is just strictly on what you can do for yourself as a player and getting yourself ready for the season. I think the biggest adjustment's going to be a new person, especially if he's from the outside of the organization, a new person coming in and being a part of a team that he doesn't know, or becoming a part of a team that the players don't know. I wholeheartedly think that it's going to be an internal person that's going to take in that role just because of that matter. But, man, I even thought about, heck, man, Brad Ausmus was an Astro for a long time. He's no longer managing. Let's bring his ass over because he's pretty dang good, pretty smart, and he may be a good fit for us.
Hey, he caught you, didn't he?
He did.
Must be a pretty good old boy then.
Yeah.
Hey, if he can deal with you on your crazy ass on the pitcher's mound, he'll be all right.
Yeah, he'll be fine, man. I really like him. And he's the first person I thought of when all this was going down and I heard that AJ was fired. I was like, man, you know, it's going to be tough for a new guy to come into a team. Now, whoever does come into the fill-in, the managerial role, he's got a good team to deal with. So athletically and on-field talent, he's already got that. It's just about the camaraderie and building that relationship with the players is going to be the deal. You know, whoever they bring in has got to fit with the players.
That's Brandon Bakke, former Houston Astros pitcher. Brandon, man, we appreciate you calling and taking the time to give us a few minutes, my brother.
Likewise, guys. I love y'all, man, and I love what y'all do. And, hey, let's hope that these Astros can just wash us away, and hopefully the fans out there stick by the side, man. There's no reason for the fans to go off on the Astros and dislike them anymore. I just want them to stay with us, and hopefully we can get a championship next year.
Hey, just get you a case of cold Coors Light and put your toes up, and you'll forget about it before you know it, baby. It'll be water under the bridge, man. Bakke, be good, brother. Take care of yourself.
Hey, likewise, guys. Take care, man.
Former Astros GM Jeff Luhnow, who was fired earlier, about 2 o'clock hour today, fired earlier by Jim Crane after the investigation into the sign-stealing, what do you want to call it?
Initiative. That's the way Luna put it in his statement. So
right.
I'm going to call it the sign-stealing initiative.
So the punishment comes down by Major League Baseball. Jim Crane acts quickly, fires the head coach. AJ Hinch fires
the
general. Gosh dang it, I keep saying head coach. Sorry out there, heck the heck with it.
There's something else on his mind right now.
Look, yeah, another head coach across town. Damn. No, the manager, AJ Hinch, got fired by Jim Crane about 2 o'clock today. And then also GM Jeff Luhnow got fired literally the next sentence out of Jim Crane's mouth. And so both of those guys have been fired from the Houston Astros, and Jeff Luhnow has come out. He's come out with a statement, and it's a longer statement. I'm going to read you the part that I think is the most interesting. He says, "I'm not a cheater. Anybody who has worked closely with me during my 32 year career inside and outside baseball can attest to my integrity. I did not know rules were being broken. As the commissioner set out in his statement, I did not personally direct, oversee, or engage in any misconduct. The sign-stealing initiative was not planned or directed by baseball management. The trash can banging was driven and executed by players, and the video decoding of signs originated and was executed by lower-level employees working with the bench coach. I am deeply upset that I wasn't informed of any misconduct, because I would have stopped it." Pretty strong words right there from former Houston Astros GM Jeff Luhnow. As we mentioned earlier, the Major League Baseball, they brought down the punishment. Jim Crane furthered the punishment by firing the manager, AJ Hinch, and the GM, Jeff Luhnow. Wade, what do you make of that particular statement?
Well, I tell you what, man, it lets you know, and I believe him when he says it, that he says he didn't know what was going on. Because if he knew what was going on, he would have put a stop to it. You could tell just based off of the words that I feel like there's some validity there. I don't think he's blowing smoke. I think that you got to understand in this situation, the players and the lower level people are the ones that are there in the day-to-day. They devise the scheme. It's been said a million times that Alex Cora was the one that kind of was behind this whole deal. And so the fact of the matter is that the players' union is so strong that, hey, that fight I don't think Major League Baseball was willing to pick. So, you know what, we can pick a fight with the guys that were responsible for those players because they fall under our umbrella in Major League Baseball. And so those are the guys that took the brunt of the punishment. And I would be remiss if I didn't put this out here, but the statement started off from Jeff Luhnow and said, "I accept responsibility for rules violations that occurred on my watch as president of baseball operations and general manager of the Astros. I apologize to the Astros organization, Astros fans, and the Houston community for the shame and embarrassment that this caused. I am deeply grateful to Jim Crane for the opportunity to lead baseball operations." Like, I think it's important to put that out there because he did take responsibility for his actions, and he did apologize to Astros fans and to the city because he understands the significance of what occurred on his watch. And at the end of the day, when you're in a position of power, what goes on from the people that are underneath your authority, you end up being responsible.
Wait, and I think it's important. About an hour ago, ESPN's Jeff Passan reported on Monday that Cora served as the Astros bench coach during the team's championship run that year. The Houston Astros dismissed manager A.J. Hinch and GM Jeff Luhnow after Major League Baseball imposed one-year suspensions on both earlier Monday after the team's sign-stealing. Obviously, that is alluding to the fact that MLB is expected to impose harsh punishment on Alex Cora for his role in the sign-stealing scandal. It's reported by ESPN. We just heard Jeff Luhnow mention that it was the bench coach that oversaw this and some lower-level employees. I'm assuming that bench coach that he's referring to is indeed Alex Cora. So there you have it, man. I think the fireworks are starting. Obviously, Jim Crane nipped it in the bud, but I would expect some kind of statement from A.J. Hinch at some point in time.
Yeah.
I would expect further punishments to be doled out, you know, as far as Alex Cora goes, and what's my man in New York, the manager, Carlos Beltran. I would expect those fireworks to pop sooner rather than later as well as we move forward. So as we mentioned, Wade, Jim Crane, he ain't wasting no time, brother. He's making moves at the top. It's unfortunate. But as I mentioned, leading into this segment, I think it has me thinking, after Sunday's embarrassing loss to Kansas City, the Texans have to make changes this offseason. And where should they start? Well, let me tell you, I'll give you just a little hint. I don't know, Wade, it's even a good idea to have a conversation about whether Bill O'Brien, the head coach and the GM, will be let go. I mean, it's one of those, like, we're just all speculating at this point.
Yeah.
But I think there's several things that you can look into as far as Bill O'Brien, the offensive coordinator. I believe that that guy, if Bill O'Brien, the head coach, and Bill O'Brien, the GM, if he honestly evaluated the play caller and the offensive coordinator, which is Bill O'Brien for this football team, if he honestly evaluated that guy, there are more than enough reasons to lead the head coach and the GM in the direction of making a move and hiring an offensive coordinator when it's all said and done. There's no justification to run this thing back as is. I hate to use that run it back term because you know how against that I was with the Rockets.
Oh, yeah.
I'm against it here, bro. Yeah. This can't be a run it back type of thing. And I think that first and foremost, the Romeo Crennel deal, he's 73 years old. That's going to work itself out. I it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't retire. I think John McClain actually wrote an article about that today in the Houston Chronicle or somewhere in some of his publishings where he's more than likely going to retire. I think that'll work itself out. But the offensive side of the football is where the future of this franchise sits, Wade.
Yeah.
And that aspect of it has to change, right? I understand there's a lot of people out there that would like to see change at the top all the way through. I don't want to get into that right now. We don't have time to get into all that. But when you talk about the low-hanging fruit of what needs to change, the offensive coordinator for this football team needs to change, Wade.
Yeah, when you look at it, Deshaun Watson is going to get paid, I don't know, $140, $150, $160 million over the next
six, seven, eight,
9 years or whatever it ends up being. And so in order to get your return on investment, you need to make sure you have somebody that puts together an offense that allows him to be his absolute best. And so you see flashes of Deshaun Watson at his best. You see flashes of him not be at his best. You see there's opportunities for him to make plays in the passing game, and there's guys running open, and there's a lot of times that there's not. And so you have to figure out a way to get a guy in the building that's going to accentuate Deshaun Watson because he's the most significant person over there in that building. You're going to invest the most assets into that particular person, talking about dollars and cents. And so you got to make it pay off for you. And so I'm not seeing how the marriage between and of course Deshaun Watson came out and said, I'm a ride with Bob. I'm a ride with Bill O'Brien. That's who he is as a person. I don't know any players that's just going to come out, especially not a quarterback, that's going to come out and be like, yeah, I'm really not feeling him. The last quarterback I heard do that was Flacco in Denver.
Yeah,
when he questioned his coach and then he got sent to the wayside. He ain't there no more. But I just don't see where Deshaun Watson is going to come out and say and not support his coach. Of course he's going to support his coach, but sometimes you need somebody outside looking in, somebody big picture to say, hey, this is what's best for you and this is what's best for the organization. So at least that needs to be done. There's so many things that are left out there on the field for the Texans to exploit and utilize, and they're not doing it right now.
Yeah.
And there's no reason if you bring in all the different assets that you brought into this organization on the offensive side of the ball to end up the year with the same offensive stats that you had last year when the players you had on the roster were nowhere near what you have now. There's no excuse for that. And so you got to make it to where Deshaun Watson continues to improve and you continue to improve the people around him so that the team can be successful. The defense, it's in a struggle situation right now because there's a lot of pieces that are kind of getting up there in age and they got to figure out what they're going to do. They got to figure out what they're going to do with the coordinator spot. But first and foremost, you got to make sure Deshaun Watson is right. And so I expect to see something, or you would hope that something goes in that way.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly,
very quickly
in the very near future.
Wait, I mean, here's the deal: is the sky's the limit for it, man? And I broke this thing up. Let me clean it up and give you a couple of points, man. The scheme should be more of a fit for Deshaun Watson, and what I mean by that is the play caller has to be well versed in Deshaun Watson type things, reads, RPOs. He came out of a power spread system. I wholeheartedly believe that whoever the play caller for this football team is needs to believe in those RPOs and those zone reads, and it needs to be in his DNA, not just try to fit it, but it needs to be in, hey, he is in a dire position and he just by habit needs to go, boom, here's the RPO or here's the zone read. He's got to believe in it like that. The play caller's got to be more creative. Currently, the success is based, it's tilted heavily towards the Texans being more talented than the opponent at the right time and in the big moments. And so that creativity and scheme have to give these guys an advantage, and play calling in game. It has to improve. And what do I mean by that? I mean, not having a play on fourth down and one or two cannot be an excuse. I don't give a damn if you're playing Kansas City. I don't give a damn if it's a preseason game. I don't care if it's a Super Bowl. You cannot have a guy calling plays that not having a fourth down play ready is possible. That is a fireable offense for offensive coordinators in this league in that moment with what was on the line Sunday. Situational football. Situational football has to improve. Wade, clock management obviously is a big part of that. And those are all things that I believe putting less on Bill O'Brien's plate, having an offensive coordinator would help tremendously.
No question about it. And I tell you what, I find it hard to believe that he didn't have a play. I understand that's a press conference right after
the
a
moment
game.
Was too big, Wade.
when he thought, I'm thinking when he thought it was a first down, he was ready to move on with his first down play. Then he realized, oh, it's his fourth down. And so now, you know, but let's go ahead and kick the field goal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But to not have a play, it's hard to believe. You have two-point plays. There's so many plays that you have on your play, but you have to have a play.
Did you see later in the game, bro?
On the fourth down
where Deshaun had to tell him, hey, coach, man, we're down 17. So I hear you. I feel you. I hear you, and I want to believe that. But when he follows it up with something like that, you go, man, I can't believe that's just happened. Like, I can't believe Deshaun had to go, coach, what are we doing, man? We're down 17. We got to go for it right here. And you call it. To me, though, those kind of things allow all those little things that create doubt to creep back in, and you go, man, the problem's bigger than I know me as a former player. The problem appears right now to be bigger than I ever thought it was because of things like that.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, when you see things like that happen on the sideline, you look at it from a player's perspective, and you think to yourself, like, what do they have to be thinking at this time?
Yes.
When you're on the sideline, like Deshaun Watson is a high-character guy. But him telling his coach, hey, we got to go for it here. Like, let's go for it here. It's fourth and four. Like, you have to have something in the back of your head that says, like, man, what's going on here? And if it's not Deshaun thinking that way, it's the veteran guys on the team that have seen it done in multiple ways and say, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, I could imagine myself standing on the sideline when it's fourth and four and we're up 24-7 and we run that fake punt. Like, we run that fake punt, it's like, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? You're giving them every bit of momentum that they needed at that moment. You're dealing with house money. So that's the part that you have to worry about. As long as Bill O'Brien has the players on his side, he's going to be good. Because if the players still believe in you, you're going to be good. It's going to take a damn near monumental collapse for anything to change.
Right.
But when the players get to the point where they start questioning things, that's where you have an issue. And so after what I saw, there's got to be some players that are looking at it and questioning things. That's the thing that you really have to worry about.
Yeah, well, when it's all said and done, Wade, I think the defensive side of the football, I think Romeo Crennel's situation is going to work itself out relative to retiring. My man's 73 years old, been at it for a minute. I think he wants to be out just as much as I think that a change needs to be made. Offensively, I just don't have any confidence in the organization making a move with the head coach or think that would be the way that they would go. But when I look at this thing, I don't see how they can go any other route than hiring an offensive coordinator. I don't know how they can go any other route, because the only way to do it otherwise would be to run it back as is on offense. And I don't think that's the case. Wade, look, we've had smoke all over the city today, baby. We've had smoke all over the city today. And so I tell you what, there's one faithful out there. It's on the line. My man, only cause I love you, Larry. Only cause I love you, baby. My man, Larry from Stafford. Let's hit these lines real quick. Larry from Stafford, what's going on, baby?
Hey, Clint, I appreciate the love. Wade, I hope y'all doing better than I am, man, because you talking about some smoke. Your ass ain't seen no smoke yet. Look, hey, on this Astro thing, hey, man, look here. We got a ring over there. The Astros got to solve that problem because Jim Crane, he was unethical in his previous life as a billionaire doing something else before he bought the Astros. So the Astros went out and did some things that they shouldn't have done. They got caught, got him a ring. Now you got to clean it up. You clean it up by going ahead and making Craig Biggio your manager. Go ahead and put Reed back in his position and let him be the GM so we can get this thing back on track. I'm not pissed off at the Astros. I'm pissed off at them fools over there on Kirby. Hey, man, let me tell you something. Y'all keep talking about they need to go out and get an offensive coordinator. What are we going to bring in an offensive coordinator that this jackass is going to tell them what to do? Bill O'Brien asked me to go, and as Cal McNair and Janice sit over there in that big old house in River Oaks, and they contemplate what the hell they should be doing, they know what they should be doing, because after 18 years, if you bring Bill O'Brien ass back after what I saw this crowd do yesterday in Kansas City, I can promise you, the moment I get my tickets next year, I'm going to put them bastards on ticket exchange, and let everybody else bid a dollar for him before I go over there and sit and watch Bill O'Brien call another game. I'll sit my ass at home before I do it. Because that dude had, if the moment was not only too big for him, but But I've seen 6 years of this fool being a jackass that I ain't seen enough of it. And me and my dogs, that we was over there partying and taking shots and everything else, thinking this dude finally had come out and done something, and he resorted back to exactly where we knew he was going to be, a coward. Because on 4th and 1, and you don't go for it, but on 4th and 4, your dumbass punt on your own end, that is a fireable offense. And I'll say this, and I'll let y'all go, man. As a longtime Houston sports fan, this is a hard day for me, man, because I got to sit back and listen to these old cockroach Cowboy fans come out of the woodworks when their ass ain't played in 3 weeks. And they coming out bragging and talking about all this other stuff. See, that's why we hate y'all. And I understand it. So don't ask me why I hate the Cowboys. Don't ask me if I'm a cheer for the Titans, because them bastards was never the Oilers either. I'm telling you, I'm a Texans fan, and I wasn't happy with what went on yesterday, and I can tell you the smoke is the least you're going to see, because Bill O'Brien and Rat, they ass got to go, man. There's no other way to get this thing back on track, because we have seen enough, and as a longtime fan, I can't give them no more fan support like that, man, after yesterday, and I'll holler.
There you have it. Another classic, baby. Another classic in the books. Wait, we ain't got time. There's a big time game tonight. The national championship game in New Orleans between LSU and Clemson is tonight. I'm taking LSU. They're going to blow the doors off of Clemson. What do you got?
I'm going to have to ride with LSU too. A couple of weeks ago, I mean, last week I thought Clemson was going to come through, but after I thought about it, LSU is going to win this game by 10 points. Give me LSU 41-31. They will be the national champions.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.